present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Ayrshire's Family History Society's newsletter, read by Charlotte Green.
A coffee morning and family history display will be hell on Saturday the 9th of September.
Now let's meet the teams. We welcome first on my right, writer, performer Andy Hamilton and chat show host Clive Anderson. Facing them on my left from The Times, Alan Corran, and writer and broadcaster Vincent Hanna. Before we start round one, here's an advertisement from the Bournemouth Evening Echo.
For sale, a Novum freezer, 38 inches high, 22 inches width, 22 inches depth. Ideal for two people.
Thank you, everybody who sent us that. Andy, your question comes first. Who said, two jobs, I need them both?
This is Richard Needham, who was something in the trade department. He was Minister for Absence of Trade or something. And after the Nolan inquiry looked into standards in public life, which was not easy, took him a long time, and they concluded that ministers ought to leave a decent interval after leaving office before they accepted jobs with, British Nuclear Fuels Limited or whoever. And so Richard Needham's taken it all to heart, and he's thought that he's left a decent interval, and now he's got, I believe it's three jobs now. So he's a one-man job explosion. And he wrote this very sad piece about how if people insist on politicians not having these outside interests, it'll reduce the calibre of person who goes into politics, which I would have thought was a scientific impossibility now.
The non-executive director of GEC, or intends to next month when the 3 month period is up, he got his first break in 1974 when he became personal assistant to Jim Breyer. It's far too trivial, and I don't want to mention the fact that Jim Breyer is now the chairman of GEC.
Oh, that's just very cynical, Vincent, that you see a connection between those two things.
I think it was just...
His third job was offered him by James Dyson, who not only invented the ball barrow, but he used a barrow for carrying fruit in. He also invented the vacuum cleaner. And I understand, well, he invented the bagless vacuum cleaner, this one that's taken Japan by storm. And it's true. And Needham's going to be in charge of a vacuum cleaner department. I think he may just end up going round banging on doors saying, can I get that bit of fluff off your husband, Mrs.? I very much hope so.
This refers to ex-minister Richard Needham, who left the government only 8 weeks ago and now has two company directorships, unless you're listening to the Monday repeat, when it could be 9 or 10. Clive, who was begging for it with the last straw?
Yes, this is Jack Straw, who is the eternally youthful Labour spokesman on something, and he's... I think a few months ago, everyone was up in arms because John Major said that there shouldn't be any beggars on the street and they should be shot and got rid of. But now, with Labour's new tactic of adopting all Conservative policies sooner or later, they've gone for this one as well. And he says it's dreadful there should be beggars on the street and squeegee people who wash your windscreens. And it's Labour Party policy to get rid of them now, apparently. Yes, so, but I'm all for them. I think those squeegee people are great. And particularly those nice guys who waylaid me at Baker Street junction with the Marylebone Road. Let me pass on without paying any money.
And it's based on a policy that they brought in New York. I mean, this guy, Mayor Giuliani.
Giuliani, he's gone around.
Brought in this policy whereby, and crime has dropped off in New York and so-called aggressive begging, but apparently the secret is that they're all in prison.
Well, what they do in the Bronx in New York, I happen to know because I've just been making a documentary there, they just go through an area with hundreds of policemen, they just arrest everybody in sight. And nobody does squeegeeing anymore in America. So you cannot see out of your car window.
Ridiculous. It's all come as something of a blow to Richard Needham, who's been offered a sight at Baker Street.
Vincent, it's your turn for a question now. Who had summit to talk about without waving their arms?
Oh, this is the fiasco in Dublin.
That's right.
Well, apparently what happened was that everybody agreed that it would be a good thing for all the people to sit around the table and talk about peace as long as none of them had any arms. And then it was further agreed that if everybody would give up arms, it would be even better. And then nobody agreed to that. So they said, would you give up something like a revolver or an ounce of Semtex? And then everybody thought we're going to agree to that. But apparently over the weekend, the IRA said to somebody, sorry, can't find any revolvers or Semtex. And so the whole thing's fallen apart.
Was the breakdown of the Irish peace talks, which led to a last-minute cancellation of a summit meeting. However, a government spokesman was confident it would be rescheduled to be postponed again next week. Alan, let's break the tension with a piece of music.
It's good news week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky.
There you are. It's Good News Week by Hedgehoppers Anonymous. And the question is, what French test failed to impress? That's a difficult one,
yes.
Isn't it?
This is Jacques Chirac's remake of South Pacific. Actually, if you remember South Pacific, there was a big fat frog in it, wasn't he? Sang a summon, chanted the evening.
That's
blow up a stranger. And that's what they've been doing. And even as we speak, Tahiti is being unseamed and taken to pieces by the Tahitians who want independence from France. But France has just developed a bomb to stop them having it.
You see the report from the French Defense Ministry on the successful test. It said that confirms that, yes, it was a bomb, it made a big bang, and if dropped in a housing estate, could be very dangerous.
It's as
That's
big
all
as,
they learnt from it.
The bomb they set off is as big as the bomb they set, you know, the Americans set off in Hiroshima, and Murat Atoll has now surrendered in the Second World War.
Well, he says that he's done it so that he doesn't have to have any more tests, and then it can go on the computer.
Well, like a gang.
Got a very exciting internet. People will be sitting there saying, let's take out Vladimir. They're funny people.
Yeah.
Peyton Cook.
Let me tell you the scores at the end of the first round, which are, as they always are on the news quiz, is tied at 4-4. We start round two with a listing from the Westminster Arts Bulletin.
Marabenta is a band which encompasses the musical traditions of those African countries colonized by the Portuguese. Musicians are from Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau, Angola, and Clerkenwell.
Thank you, Roy Osborne of Putney, for that. Andy, your question again. Who is gaining currency with his notion of a warlike union?
Hang on a second, I'm just going to confer.
Do you read the Times at all? There's a guy who's written a book who works for the...
Yes. I read the headline of this.
Do you want to answer it for you? No, it's somebody who works for the European Union in some way. It's been working for 20 years on bringing in a joint currency, or a single currency for Europe. And he's now made the discovery that it'll be dreadful and it'll bring the end of civilization as we know it. And he's had the temerity to speak out and say this. And, of course, everybody in Brussels is saying the man's mad. And he's probably English as well. And you should ignore him. It's the ramblings of an idiot. I don't know why we've been employing him for all these years. But according to him, the mere fact of bringing in a single currency is going to bring Europe to its knees and we'll have a war again. And it all seems very plausible to me, but he's going to be sacked probably.
But he is mad. Do you know that when Mrs. Thatcher resigned, he got so upset that they had to send for the EC doctor and treat him for hyperventilation?
No. That could have been joy.
We all went through something like that, didn't we?
You were so useful to Andy Clive, you get this question all to yourself.
Oh, right.
Who realised not a penny less than £35 million?
Oh, this is my old chum, Sir Geoffrey. It's Lord Geoffrey Archer. Yes. Anyway, he's got more money than the rest of the country put together. In order to write, he wrote a book which was apparently very good, and he was going to get a few million pounds for it, and then somebody in Hollywood saw the first chapter and said, this is marvellous, this will turn into a great movie. So they've given him £32 million. It's beyond the dreams of Martin Amis. It's just absolutely fantastic amount of money. And good luck to him, I say.
Yes.
He's on the phone, Clive.
Yeah. And he's a fine writer and does sue.
Apparently the secret was that, as you know, filmmakers, that the secret of the pitch is to be able to sum up the story in one sentence.
Yes.
And he could do his in two words, apparently. one of which was an adjective.
Yeah.
But the chilling moment in the story, the chilling moment was he said that he was really pleased because this was his best idea yet.
I bet you he wins the lottery. Vincent, your turn for a piece of music.
In the clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his dreams, and he carries the reminders of every blow that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame.
The question is, who went a distance to get his belt?
Frank Bruno is the world heavyweight champion. See, it always gets a laugh. The world title, the WBC version, was held by a gentleman called Oliver McCall, who arrived in London with 27 hangers-on, and nobody knows quite why he came. We think it may be to get a date with Princess Di. It certainly wasn't to fight. In fact, he's the only fighter in history who may be found guilty of taking a performance-reducing drug. But dear old Frank stood there for 12 rounds, slept his way through, tied him up, put his hand behind his back. Oliver woke up about round 12, and we all got a bit alarmed at that, because he, you know, pawed at Frank, and Frank almost fell over. But he is... we're thrilled for Frank, absolutely thrilled. What relevance it has to sport, no one has the faintest idea.
Alan, here's your question. Where might you enjoy a gaily arresting weekend?
This is South Yorkshire Water Authority, isn't it? I mean, what's the police force, but exactly the same as the Water Authority. South Yorkshire policemen are being billeted on homosexual couples. I suppose billeted is the word. I don't know what... Well, anyway, they're being put into close, troilistic enclave with homosexual couples to teach them to be better policemen.
How did they do that? I mean...
I don't know. They probably use that new truncheon. I don't know. I've never known. I don't believe it happens, actually. I'm rather like Queen Victoria. I don't think grown men get up to that sort of thing. But anyway, they're plucking these policemen from the streets and they're putting them into cottages. and this will help them to understand. I that's all there is. I didn't read any further. I came over all of a doodah, really. And my friend had to mop me down.
Cynics suggest that they could be targeting all the gays in South Yorkshire, the better to raid them when the next trouble starts.
Oh, I like that. That's all right. Yeah, come out like that. No, it's a serious story. Can't see Jack Warner doing it. Fine, there you go.
Evening all.
Mind where you go, yeah.
No one likes a bent copper. Well, this... I'm glad I woke up for that. No.
What I want to know is, Alan, what was the phrase, "but this is a serious story," doing in the middle of all that?
And the scores at the end of round two are still tied at 8-all. We start round three with a notice from the Troon Times.
Troon Players Drama Club regret that their spring production, Not Now, Darling, by Ray Cooney and John Chapman, has been postponed until November.
Thank you, Charlotte. That was lovely. Andy, what tartan epic had a checkered start?
Is this a question about Braveheart?
It is.
Right. But this is a serious story, by the way. I just want to put that in. Now, can I distance myself from Vincent Hanna's remarks about Frank Bruno? Because Frank's an avid listener to Radio 4, apparently. I think he could be round in the morning.
That's pathetic. If a fight starts, you want to be on Frank's side rather than Vincent, who's a bit of a mean ducker and a weaver himself, I
think. Yeah.
In the heavyweight division, I would say.
My money's on Frank. I mean, no disrespect, Vincent, but... Yes, Braveheart, a film about the Scots hero William Wallace, was premiered. It stars Mel Gibson. I haven't seen it myself.
But I know the answer to this without being...
Go on.
Mel Gibson is right. Mel Gibson is the guy who played Mad Max, and he played... or was he just pretending to be Mad Max? He's in Braveheart, and he's all over the posters for his film, but the Scots Nationalist Party thought it'd be a good image to use for them as well, because it's all about a Scots hero. And so they used it, and Mel said, no, you can't do that. This is not a political thing. This is just a film. You can't use me for a political party. And I think it'd be much better to have gone along with it, because all the sort of Scots nationalists would have gone along and seen the film and got excited and interested. Yeah. They are basically the target audience, I'd have thought, for a film about William Wallace, who was disemboweled outside St Bartholomew's Hospital in London, which I always mention when I'm on this programme.
Well, tell everybody the ending now.
He was hung, drawn and quartered, and his entrails were taken out and castrated before he died.
Jack Straw
the English the English are so cross, aren't they, when they, another group gets up there.
Outside bar.
It was outside bar. He would have been taken inside, but Virginia de Bottomley had whoever's now replaced her is.
I like the idea of Mel Gibson saying to Alex Salmond, "I don't want to get involved in British politics," and Salmond said, "Stop pinching my line."
This is Mel Gibson's latest film, Braveheart. You're absolutely right. The Chequered Star refers to the fact that critics didn't like it. They say that the 13th century movie is inaccurate and has many anachronisms, but Mel says he made sure there were none, not even in the airport scenes. Mel and his top technical advisor, Jimmy Cranky, took the trouble to study the great clan battles between the McDonald's and the Burger Kings. Clive, have a listen to this.
If you take snows, it surely shows, with waistcoat stained and so's your nose. But don't he fret, it ain't so rough, no one's been known to die of snuff. Sniff, sniff, sniff up the snuff, there's
sniff up the snuff by the Wurzels.
Yes.
And the question is, why is a high old time on the farm not to be sniffed at?
Was that Bill Wyman? Was he this week?
No, that was last week, did Bill.
Is this a repeat?
No.
No, obviously not, so I wouldn't have to be here, would I?
No.
I'm burbling away until... I've done all your questions, Andy. You must have...
Now you're on your own, Clive, so I'm afraid.
Your accent was set in deepest arches, so... So there's something smelly in the countryside?
No, it's the...
Cocaine.
No, but like that. Like
snuff.
That, like that. Like that.
Like cocaine. talcum powder.
First syllable.
It's not the one about health food and being pig food. The Chinese pig food one.
No.
Just the one
about... Can you sniff a pig and get a high from it? People are shoving pigs up their noses.
I want to hear this story now. I want to hear this.
We've never heard of this story, Barry.
I'd like to hear about it too. Get around to it. These are young farmers who are sniffing silage and swallowing pig tranquilizers and horse amphetamines.
Wait a minute, but I live in Islington. How am I supposed to know this?
Abusers are warned that it can be extremely dangerous to take amphetamines meant for horses. One stable lad took a handful too many and rushed around so much he broke his leg. So they had to shoot him. Vincent, your question now. What long trek went off the track?
Oh, God, this is a great story, yes. This is wonderful. Two Bosnian teenagers decided to get out of that living hell that is Bosnia. So they hitched a lift on an aid lorry, and they got to Austria, and then they went around begging to get money. Fortunately, Jack Straw wasn't in Austria that week. And they got to Germany, and then they begged some more, and then they got to Belgium, and they stowed away on a cross-channel ferry, and then they got on a train, and they suddenly got to Reading, and they jumped on another train thinking they were going to London and ended up into South Wales. Now, as soon as the train entered the safe haven of Bridgend, they were arrested by a member of British Rail's Rapid Reaction Force for not having a ticket. After all that trouble.
That's right, absolutely.
And they've applied to Michael Howard for political asylum, but it may be refused on the grounds that the political asylum is full.
It is an amazing story. Fancy two people wanting to go to Swansea. However, Alan, what grassroot takeover promised nine cuttings?
Oh, it's not Atco and
yes,
Bosch?
Yes.
Oh, dear. That was a very small story in only one newspaper. It was actually in Gardener's World. The Germans are coming over here and sleeping with our lawnmowers.
We have a wonderful mower in England called the Atco.
Yes.
I actually had one. It had this very strange clutch, and when you let the clutch up, it just ran away.
Did it?
The Germans quite liked that, because it meant you could start in Rotterdam, probably get to Dunkirk by the afternoon. The Germans aren't allowed, actually, to build their own weapons anymore. A company called Bosch, with an S and a C,
a giveaway.
Has bought Atco in order to turn it into a sort of Waffen-Panzer division. You can actually stand on the Atco and put your head through the roof with your hand up, which they rather like. I think they're going to mow Prague next week. Then possibly Poland. Do you remember when they used to come through the orchard? I mean, every film over the past few years where we commemorated the anniversary has shown those German motorcycle combinations going through Polish orchards. Is that a lawnmower?
The Poles would have had lovely lawns.
Been in Bridgend by 30 years.
True.
When Bush takes over, it's going to come in every week and order you to cut the lawn. Did you know that, I looked this up, Flymo is the other great British thing. It's actually owned by Sweden. There's no such thing as a British lawnmower anymore.
Sorry, you looked it up? why would you look that up? Yeah.
Where was it up in Who's Who in Lawnmower? I said, there must be a British lawnmower left. And there isn't. Flymo are made by the Swedes.
The Swedes did sod all during the war. They made ball bearings and sold them to both sides. No wonder they
come in here.
The money to buy a flyer.
Anyway, let me tell you that the scores at the end of round three have changed slightly because Andy and Clive have 10, but Alan and Vincent have leapt into the lead with 12. Before we start the final round, here's a news item from the News of the World.
A senior detective has been quizzed over claims that he flashed on a tube train bound for Cock Fosters.
Thank you, Mrs. Rosemary Hiscock. Of Bournemouth. Well, you know what they're like in Bournemouth.
That's near Littlehampton, isn't it?
Yes. At least I didn't have to say that. Andy, have a listen to this. The question is, who wants all things bright and equal?
Yes, well, I was a choir boy for many years. Sorry, it's not going to be a very personal confession. And I had to sing all things bright and beautiful a lot. And so I thoroughly agree with the Bishop of Wherever. And he said that he finds this song sort of hateful and unchristian, mainly because of one verse where it says that our Lord made the rich man in his castle and the poor man at the gate. I mean, I think he's probably been a bit oversensitive. We don't know why the poor man is at the gate. I mean, maybe he's storming the castle. I don't know. But anyway, so he said that he'd rather this hymn was banned, and everyone got very upset. But I would ban it.
Well, it's such a surprise because it's a rather strange statement. It turns out he's a Catholic bishop and not a Church of England, who is the normal category of person to make funny statements.
Yes.
This refers to the Bishop of Leeds, who wants to see a bit of a hymn taken out. The bishop objects to verse 3 of All Things Bright and Beautiful, which implies that God created social inequality. And he's right, it was Mrs. Thatcher. Clive, Quo Vadis treasured memoranda status quo?
Yes, this is the Foreign Office and the Treasury and Whitehall generally.
Right.
And apparently they're all made up of, or most of the people there over many years have been made up of people with good degrees, first in greats from Oxford or occasionally Cambridge if they're slumming it. And they all talk to each other apparently in Latin, having not noticed that the world has moved on since the last couple of thousand years. And some sort of technocrat there has said, no, we must stop doing this because it puts off the people who weren't fortunate enough to study classics at our great universities, and we'll start speaking in English, which will have the disadvantage of people will know what we're saying to each other, but will stop making people feel inferior. And so they've decided to say you must speak in English, which I think is a good thing. It's about time
they got rid of Latin. Worse than that, but the quote was that they should learn to speak in the English of good, crisp journalism.
Yes.
So the Foreign Office will be saying things like, up yours, yeah. Delors. Yeah. Gotcha. Amazing.
Well, it would be a rather pleasant change, though, wouldn't it, from this? Says, OK, it's all right with us, but in Latin.
The First Secretary of the Treasury et my hamster. Yeah.
No, I think it's very obviously a good idea. In fact, res ipsa loquitur, as far as I'm concerned.
It's news that the Treasury Mandarins have banned the use of Latin in their internal communication, so staff are no longer allowed to say they're talking per anum. Vincent, what actress is working even when she's resting?
I don't know what to make of this story. Tilda Swinton.
Right.
Is in a glass case in the Serpentine Gallery, where she is an exhibit. She sleeps all day, or tries to. The whole thing is a thing, it's an art exhibit called The Maybe. And the idea is, according to the organisers, that she will be exploring a series of essential unanswerable questions, such as, has the British art establishment gone stark raving mad? Apparently, if she discovers any of the answers, she won't tell you because she's only paid for lying down and not for speaking.
This refers to Tilda Swinton, the performance artist and winner of Wiltshire's Best Kept Village Award. His latest work involves her sleeping in a glass case. The piece entitled The Maybe, as you so rightly say, says to her, mankind is fragile. Why, it says to us, the pubs are open. However, art critics claim the work must be valid because no matter where you go, the audience seems to follow you out of the room. However, we've come to the end, but before I reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy?
Well, my cutting, I just think, is intriguing. I'd just like to know the story behind it. It's from the Scottish Sunday Post. It's an advert which appeared in a shop window, and the advert reads, full set of golf clubs, good condition, a snip at £100. If a man answers the phone, hang up.
Why is my wife laughing her head off?
This is also a Scottish story. It's from a paper which reports a notice in the cafe at Torresay Castle on the Isle of Mull. Will ladies please rinse out teapots, then stand upside down in the sink? On no account must hot bottoms be placed on the worktops.
Vincent.
I've got one from the Miami Herald about Hell's Angel and his bike. Bertram Hot Thing Tonks parked his Harley Davidson outside a bar in Miami when he came out, he thought he saw a shapely woman in a pink jumpsuit straddling his beloved bike. So he hit her. Wasn't a woman, but Charlton, a large pink hog who had become sexually excited on seeing the Harley Davidson and was trying to mount it. Passers-by made the same mistake as Bertram, and seeing him assaulting this pink woman, joined in with baseball bats. 14 people went to hospital, but Charlton was unscathed.
Thank you, Vincent. Alan?
Now, I have a cutting from the Bespera News, Barry.
Good heavens.
Yes. It says, officers running the RSPCA stand at Hokum Country Fair were called when a complaint was made to them about another sideshow featuring Romany Ned and his singing Labrador. A member of the audience had noticed that the dog sang only when its owner trod on its tail.
Well, let's look at the final scores, which are Andy and Clive, 14, Alan and Vincent are this week's winners with 16. Well played.
In the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Clive Anderson and Vincent Hanna. The chairman was Barry Took, and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Aled Evans.